This is America on the Road, winner of the International Automotive Media Conference Gold Medal Award for Radio, and now in its 24th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. And we've got some global stories to talk about today, some global intrigue, a utopia being formed, a bunch of stuff to talk to you about. America on the Road is brought to you by DrivingToday.com and the Coalition for Vehicle Choice. I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. Chris, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to these global stories where enemies become friends and friends become enemies.
Yeah, I think all of those things are going to happen. We have global soap opera to talk with, among other things. I hope things are going well with you in Maine. Are they?
They are. Winter has crept its way in, although we just started fall, I believe. Quite chilly these days.
Yeah, I can imagine. You're in Maine. I'm in Southern California. I won't bore you with the weather here because it's always boring, 70 degrees and sunny. So you don't need to hear that. Our special guest today, getting back to what we're going to talk about on the show, is Paul Rivera. He is the CEO of an electric car maker called Electra Mechanica Vehicles Corporation. They're based in Vancouver, BC, Canada. I had the chance to drive one of their vehicles recently. It's a one-passenger, you heard that right, one-passenger electric car called the Solo. And after I drove it, I talked with him about it, so we will share that with you. In the car review segment, Chris will be talking about what?
The 2021 Mercedes-AMG GLE 53 Coupe. And there's a couple more paragraphs of the name after that, but yes.
Yeah, that's long stuff. It goes all the way around the back of the car and into the side, I think, is where they're showing that nameplate. I will review the Volkswagen Arteon sedan. It might be a new name to virtually everybody out there, but you and I will talk about that. We're both in the know on that one, and that'll be fun. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit about automotive news that's going on from around the globe. Why don't I just dive in here and share this thing about Volkswagen establishing what should be, or they hope to be, a utopia of e-mobility on an island, a Mediterranean island, that is owned by Greece. It might be kind of a cool thing.
I haven't heard this one yet. That's an interesting concept, though.
Yeah, Volkswagen and the Greek government have agreed to establish a mobility system on the Mediterranean island of Astypalaia. I'm not sure where that is, but I'm sure it's charming. It is kind of a resort island, as many of the Greek islands are. Their goal is to become a model island for climate-neutral mobility, which seems pretty simple on a pretty small island, as opposed to, say, a big country like the United States. But thanks for trying, and I think that's a great thing. They're going to have all-electric year-round ride-sharing services. They currently have two local buses. So electricity is going to take over from the two local buses. They're going to have vehicle rental, including electric vehicles from Seat, which is a Volkswagen brand, and e-bikes in addition to electric cars. And what they suggest is there'll be about 1,000 electric vehicles on the island that will replace about 1,500 vehicles that have internal combustion engines.
I think that's a pretty neat idea, though, at least for the island life. You know, some other islands, I know there are a couple, maybe in the Caribbean and elsewhere, that only do like mini cars or smart cars for people, especially tourists who are just visiting. So that could be a reasonable thing, especially if there's, you know, solar or some other way to generate the electricity that's not fossil fuel powered. So I'll be watching that.
Yeah, one of the cool things about it too is they don't have to go very far. I mean, how big is the island? It can't be all that big. There is an island in, I think it's in, it's either in Lake Michigan or Lake Superior. It might be in Lake Superior. It's right at kind of the tip of southern Michigan, the southern Michigan Peninsula, called Mackinac Island, where they don't allow cars. They don't allow private cars. I think there's a couple, maybe internal combustion vehicles on the island for service purposes and that kind of thing. But it's kind of a cool place to go because it's a throwback to a time before automobiles.
Yeah, it's a neat concept.
Yeah, so that's going on. Do you have a news item for us, or should I go onward here?
I do. It's an interesting thing out of my almost neighbor to the south in Massachusetts. The election part of it just wrapped up yesterday, and one of the ballot questions in Massachusetts had to do with right to repair, and in this case, it passed. And so what this is saying is that starting in 2022, new cars will have to come with an app that gives buyers control over their telemetric data, and that's everything from like tire pressure to location, speed, how long the car was running. The idea is that this will help car owners and consumers be able to solve and identify and solve some of the problems themselves without having to go to a dealership because of a proprietary OBD2 or onboard diagnostic port, and then the data that the dealerships have to pull out. So I think this is a win for car buyers. It expands on their other 2012 law or vote that said that the automakers had to give buyers access to the parts and the manuals to do their own repairs. So I think this will probably end up in some way sparking a change across the industry.
Yeah, I think there's an enthusiasm for that around the country. My brother for 40 years has operated his own independent automobile shop, repair business. And of course, getting access to what would be proprietary to the manufacturer is very, very important for those independent shops. So that is a pretty cool thing. When it comes to ballot measures out here in California, they passed an initiative that allows the continuation, I suppose, of is the way you might call it, of Uber and Lyft as rideshare drivers and enabling those drivers, and I use enable in quotes, I guess, to remain as independent contractors. I think the alternative to being independent contractors is no job at all, which I believe is why this measure passed. But quite a controversial thing. The state legislature in California had passed a law essentially making or forcing those people to become full-time employees, which I don't think either Lyft or Uber was going to sit still for. So those two companies backed this initiative, which passed.
I was going to say, we've heard a lot about Lyft and Uber over the years with employees wanting, or not employees, but drivers wanting benefits or needing benefits and time off of work and things like that. So if the alternative is no work at all, I can see why people would vote for that. So,
yeah, I think there are, two sides of every coin. There are two sides of all the ballot initiatives. I think on the plus side, this gives the people flexibility to work when they want to using these two app-based systems. And they give up the right to be full-time employees, because I don't think either Lyft or Uber was going to hire hundreds of thousands of full-time employees to do that. They're more likely to have bailed from the state overall.
Absolutely.
Here's another one. We promised you international intrigue, and here it is. Carlos Ghosn, you probably have heard of him. He was the chairman of Nissan Motor and Renault SA. Then he was imprisoned in Japan, that was scandal enough. But then he escaped. He escaped, I think, to his home country of Lebanon with the help of a former Green Beret. And now that Green Beret is facing extradition to Japan from the U.S., I think it's illegal to break people out of jail and smuggle them out of the country. Ghosn has a book, so that's the point of all this. It's called Time for the Truth, and he tells at least his version of the truth about the fact that he's not guilty and he was railroaded and all of this stuff is very, very unfair. He's doing that from essentially his exile in Lebanon. So it's a book you might look for. Look for reading it in French if you get it, because I think it has not been translated into English yet. But an interesting book, Time for the Truth.
I'm sure it will be an interesting story.
Yeah. And I think more to come, and we'll see if he gets extradited at some point or can prove his innocence or whatever. Maybe he'll be the Roman Polanski of the car industry, not able to go to many countries across the across the globe. Well, when we come back, we will be doing car reviews. And boy, we've got some nifty cars. Yeah, even niftier, I think, than usual cars, including the 2021 Mercedes AMG GLE 53 Coupe. And I will review the Volkswagen Arteon sedan. So stay with us for that when we come back. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad. Thanks for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague. Jack Nerad back with you, and we're so thankful you're with us on America on the Road. We really do appreciate it. It is road test time, and wow, we were styling this week. I mean, I don't know that my clothes were styling so much, and I'm sure you're very stylish, Chris, but tell our listeners the stylish vehicle that you were driving around in this week.
I spent the week in the 2021 Mercedes AMG GLE 53 Coupe. And if that wasn't long enough for you, there are, I'm sure, other names that they have that go on for even longer than that. But the big story here is performance. AMG, as you know, is the performance arm of, or performance sort of wing of Mercedes-Benz that takes many of their normal vehicles and tunes them up to insane levels of power in some cases. That was not the case for this one. It's got 429 horsepower from a 3-liter straight six that's turbocharged, and it's also got an electric motor that can supplement that power with about 21 extra ponies when it's needed. And off the line, you can definitely feel that because it's got a lot more torque and pull to it right off the bat. This particular model, the model that I tested, clocked in at around $108,000. The base price for this car is $76,500, so that represents $32,000 in options, many of which were applied to the interior, which I'll get to in just a minute. But if you're not familiar with the coupe shape, which I'm sure you are, Jack, but it's basically a crossover that is shaped like a car. The back end slopes off heavily. In a lot of cases, it cuts off headroom, but that's not the case here. It's still a larger vehicle, but it's got a really dramatic shape. And combined with this particular model, had 22-inch black wheels, black paint, and all the fixings on the outside. It's quite a sinister look. It was a great car to have around for Halloween last weekend.
Right. It's a really good looking vehicle, at least in my eyes. I think they've really done an excellent job with it. And I think they have given up some utility for its shape, but it's pretty darn cool.
I think that's true, but they didn't give up much. The storage, the cargo area in this thing, if you're not carrying tall items, can carry long items. It's a very, very deep cargo space. It's very easy to carry lots of items. I was able to throw two full-size car seats back there and some gear for the weekend. But inside this, that $30,000 in options, there was Napa leather seating. This had the dynamic seating package, I believe it's called. Somebody's going to correct me on that. But what that does is it adds a massaging feature. So you have like six different massages with heating and cooling that you can choose from. The interior has a built-in air freshener for whatever reason, I don't know, but it works very well.
I think it freshens the air, Chris.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, I think that's what it does.
And two 12-inch displays. So one in the gauge cluster, it's all digital. And then the infotainment screen is also, I think it's a 12.3-inch horizontally oriented display. All of the tech under the sun, every advanced safety option from radar cruise control to driver alert warnings to rear cross traffic alerts, adaptive suspension that adjusts itself, I think somewhere around 1,000 times or 100 times a second, some very large number there. I'd have to go back and look. But in practice, what that does is it allows the vehicle to be both very comfortable on the road and then also handle very well, especially in Sport Plus mode, where everything kind of seizes up. You can almost feel it tense up like a clenched fist when you put it into Sport Plus. But the reality is that it's still a big vehicle. It's still a crossover, despite being called a coupe or coupe, if you please. And it feels big behind the wheel. It's a very almost cavernous feeling. It's not to say it's not fun to drive. It makes a wonderful sound. It's very quick, handles very well, but it is big, and you can feel that width and that height as you're driving down the road. The interior, as I mentioned, very nicely finished. Several different colors of ambient lighting that can be chosen. A nice suede-covered steering wheel, which is probably my biggest complaint about the vehicle, is that it only had 4,000 or 5,000 miles on it, and the steering wheel already started showing wear. So I think that's probably not the best choice of material, although it does feel great in the hand. If I had $108,000, would I buy this if I were looking for a crossover? Maybe, but I might also head for a Cayenne or something similar to that, just to have a more traditional crossover shape. But if you can live with the shape, I love the shape, but if you can live with the reduced cargo height and some of the space cramp in the back, definitely a fun vehicle to have around.
Yeah, absolutely cool. And of course, AMG, the performance arm of Mercedes-Benz, they do a remarkable job. And these vehicles are terrific. I mean, if you're a driver, you like them very typically, even though this is a taller vehicle, it still handles really, really well. And just a lot to like. And we should really like vehicles that cost over $100,000. That's the way I look at it. I was driving a vehicle that claims to be the brand halo of Volkswagen. And it's interesting because it's a vehicle that a lot of people probably haven't heard of. It's the Volkswagen Arteon. And it is a sports sedan that kind of has the coupe shape. It's one of these four-door coupe things that have gotten currency lately. Kind of contradiction in terms, but we talk about it anyway. And I think it's a really cool car to get started. I think it's a really good-looking vehicle. And if you want to be distinctive, I'd say go out and buy a Volkswagen Arteon, because you're not going to see yourself on every corner, I can tell you that. It's a vehicle that starts at about $36,000 or so. Like I say, it has a really cool exterior design, including a hatchback, although it looks like a sedan. It is available with 4Motion all-wheel drive, which we like, although I don't have all that much weather to deal with. I'm sure you would like it there in Maine, Chris. available in the multiple Volkswagen trims, the typical trims, SE, SEL, SEL R-Line, and SEL Premium R-Line. And it's got a lot of good stuff. I had an SE version. It had the major option that it had was the 4Motion all-wheel drive. The base SE has front-wheel drive. And this, like I say, beyond the good-looking exterior, it also has a very sleek and good-looking contemporary interior. Plenty of room for four. You can squeeze three into the back seat, but it's, I think, kind of this, I wouldn't say close coupled, because you have plenty of rear seat leg room, but it's one of those vehicles that I think is built more for four people than it is for five, simply because it's more coupe-like. It has LED headlights, daytime running lights, a bunch of good stuff on the outside, a bunch of good stuff on the inside, including, well, I guess this is both in and out, is the panoramic tilt and slide sunroof that's standard on a lot of the higher line models. Like I say, a lot of rear legroom, 40.2 inches, which probably means nothing to the listener, but you and I both know it means that's a lot. You don't see that very often. And it offers close to 20 cubic feet, 19.9 cubic feet of rear storage. They call it trunk storage, but it's actually under hatchback. And with the rear standard rear seats folded, they're standard 60-40 rear seats, it goes up to 55 cubic feet. So in some ways, it's almost a station wagon. In a lot of ways, this is the Audi A7, but in Volkswagen form. And overall, this is a vehicle I liked a lot. I liked the way it drove. It's not super powerful. Its base engine and only engine is a 2-liter turbo, so it's not bringing huge amounts of power to the party. But it's just a fun car to drive, and I think a fun car to be seen in.
I agree. I'm a big fan of that shape, and we just talked about it with the crossover style. But Volkswagen and Audi, and even vehicles like the Kia Stinger, I've been a big fan of the shape, and Volkswagen has done a good job with their interior, and their infotainment systems have been excellent in recent years. So I haven't gotten to drive the new Arteon yet, but I've read and written about it. So I think from the outsider's perspective, it looks great.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought up infotainment system, because I did want to talk about that a little bit. It has the Volkswagen MIB2, I think Men in Black 2 touchscreen. I don't think it's for Men in Black, actually. Touchscreen infotainment system. It has an 8-inch capacitive touch screen display, that I can almost say. And integrates well with Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, Mirror Link, all of that stuff. You can also put an SD card in it. You're probably carrying SD cards in your wallet that you want to slip right into your car and do something with, look at pictures or listen to music. I think they do that in Europe a lot. We don't seem to. A lot to like about the infotainment system, and just the overall design of the interior is very ergonomic, which means it works exceptionally well. It's easy to understand. There was nothing that I was confused about, and I'm easily confused. So this is a vehicle that I like a lot. And for something like $45,000, I mean, $45,000 for a Volkswagen sedan might seem like a whole bunch. But if you want something that is distinctive and will help you stand out from the crowd, which I guess is probably the definition of distinctive, the Volkswagen Arteon will certainly do the trick.
I agree.
Excellent. Well, I think we had two keepers this week. I think we were living above our stations probably this week in these two vehicles, and the Mercedes-Benz AMG and the Volkswagen Arteon. And when we come back, we will be taking your listener questions and then answering some of them, hopefully with good answers. So we look forward to doing that with Chris Teague, Jack Nierad with you. Thanks for being with us on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nierad back with you along with Chris Teague, and we're so glad you're with us. Thanks so much for being with us. It is listener question time right here on America on the Road, and I think we've got some nifty, interesting questions for you from our listeners. Our listeners are really intelligent people, and they ask a lot of terrific questions. And, well, here's one of them. I'm not sure where this listener lives, but the question is this. I see a lot of deer in my neighborhood. Should I be concerned about running into one of them?
That's a good one, especially here in Maine. I guess it would depend on what kind of neighborhood you live in. I see deer in my neighborhood, but it's relatively residential, and I don't think most people are driving more than 25 or 30 miles an hour, which sometimes you can't stop, but that definitely speed does play a big factor in being able to slow down. You know, in some places, deer, first of all, I'm not a wildlife expert, but deer are completely unpredictable. And the way that they run is almost never in a straight line, is almost never as you would expect a person to, you know, just run across the road in a straight line. That's not really how deer do it. They get out on the road and they kind of dart around. So the answer is yes, you should keep your eyes open. But I don't think that you should drive around, you know, white knuckling the steering wheel everywhere because you think a deer is going to dart out in front of you. Keeping in mind that deer do cause significant damage to your car, but here in Maine, the bigger worry, at least for personal safety, is moose, because they tend to fall on top of your car and cause a lot more damage.
Yeah, I think the moose are taller, right, than deer. But yes. I think a lot of people across the country, I mean, this is kind of an unheralded epidemic of a problem, is people running into deer, and it happens all the time. And in a lot of areas, of course, deer are just running free. And as you say, they're unpredictable. And they also get a little randy at times. I think this is the time, actually, where they're kind of mating. And I'm not certain about deer's mating habits, but I think it's in the fall. And when that's happening, I think like humans in that similar situation, you know, they get a little irrational. Not that deer are so irrational to begin with. So they do a lot of strange things, and, you know, you've heard of the old saying about the deer in the headlights. They will stop right in front of you or dart right out in front of you, and so you got to watch out for them. And when you see one by the side of the road, don't expect it to go, oh, here comes the car. I'm going to wait here until the car goes by. It could just leap out in front of you at less than a moment's notice.
Yeah, and at least as the case here, if you see one, there are generally several others around it. We have like herds or flocks or whatever they're called on the side of the highway. You'll just see them. We have signs that say, you know, watch for deer, not your phone, and try to be funny about it. But it really is something you just need to keep your eyes open. That's really the biggest thing here.
Absolutely. So watch out for those deer, especially, you know, when they're a little excited. So that's something that could happen. Here's another quick question, and I think you might have an answer for this, Chris. Should I change the coolant in my car? And if so, how often should I do it?
You will occasionally need to change the coolant in your car. How often that is will probably depend on how much you drive and what kind of vehicle you have. The average is somewhere around 30,000 miles. So, you know, every 30,000 miles, that says have the coolant flushed and replaced. And what that does is they drain out the coolant, and they flush it to make sure it's clean, and they add new coolant back in. I am not a mechanic. I'm not going to describe the whole process here. But in general, if you find that you're needing to replace the coolant in your car frequently, if you get or if your car is overheating quite a bit, then it's time to go to a mechanic because that either indicates a problem with the cooling system, the thermostat, or a leak of some sort. Again, not a mechanic, just what common knowledge here. So in general, I'd say every 30,000 miles or so, which for most people is probably going to be almost 2 years of driving, somewhere around there.
That is a very good answer. I think there are some vehicles now where the coolant is made for the life of the car, quote unquote. I think if you had that car for over 100,000 miles, you might be well advised to purge the coolant and start again. It's also important that you use the proper coolant for your car. Not all coolants or antifreeze coolants are the same, they have the same chemistry. And in fact, they're getting, in a lot of ways, a bit more proprietary to various brands. So you've got to watch out for that. You know, check with your local auto parts store or somebody in the know, your local mechanic, to make sure you're getting the right coolant if you're going to change it yourself. You might also want to top off your coolant every now and then. Check your coolant level. I don't think many people are even checking their oil these days, so asking them to check their coolant level might be a little beyond the pale, but it's not a bad thing to do. Pretty easy to do. You look under the hood, there is a coolant reservoir, and it has a minimum and maximum indicator on it, and if it's somewhere in between, you're probably in pretty good shape.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. So that's it on coolant and antifreeze, and you're dealing more with freeze than I am, and I'm happy about that. But I think there is the beauty of a Maine winter as well, isn't there?
Oh, it's spectacular. It's great. If you can just get used to the duration of the winter, then you're good.
Yeah, very good. Well, when we come back, I will be bringing you my interview with Paul Rivera. He is the CEO of a company called Electromechanica, talking about their solo individual electric vehicle that I had a chance to drive recently. So stay with us for that. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nerad with you on America on the Road. Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nerad back with you, and we have a special guest with us. His name is Paul Rivera. He is the CEO of Electromechanica Vehicles Corporation. And that might not be a familiar name to you, but we'll make it familiar over the course of the next several minutes. Paul, thanks so much for being with us. We do appreciate it.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for having me. A real pleasure.
Yeah, well, it was a pleasure to speak to you, and it was a pleasure to meet you in person. I guess it was a week or so ago. I got a chance to drive your solo vehicle. Tell us a bit about your company, how you're involved, and then let's talk about the product itself.
Okay, thanks a lot again. So first of all, Electromechanica, we've been around since 2015. And I think the biggest thing is that we're a Canadian designer and manufacturer of electric vehicles, really quite different than many of the other EV companies that are out there, right? Our company is meant to revolutionize commuting and delivery and shared mobility experience with our flagship vehicle, which is a single occupant, and you heard me correctly, it's a single occupant vehicle, right? So one person in the vehicle, and our flagship vehicle is the Solo. And we're very, very excited because we've just put it into production in August.
Right. Well, it seems like a lot of companies in this space, and there are many more companies in this space than there were when Electromechanica began, are kind of trying to mine the upper levels of the car industry, right? And you're actually approaching it completely from a different angle. Give us the philosophy there.
Yeah, and I think that you've touched on that, and that is that most of companies today, they're out and they're trying to compete mostly with Elon, right? And they're mostly trying to compete with Tesla. And a lot of these companies are Chinese funded. A lot of them are based in Southern California. and they're trying to put on the road a large sedan vehicle or even a crossover or an SUV, electric vehicle that's typically very, very expensive. And, they have 3 to 4 empty seats in the vehicle most of the time. And it doesn't matter whether or not, if you think about it, it doesn't matter whether or not they have, whether it's an electric vehicle or even an internal combustion engine. If you go back to an internal combustion engine, most of those large vehicles are typically sized to carry those 3 to 4 empty seats. They're typically sized to carry, additional payload, like additional, trunk space in the back to carry extra cargo that you don't necessarily ever utilize fully, right? So it's an oversized powertrain that's definitely most of the time underutilized. And this vehicle that we have is purpose-built. It's a purpose-built solution for urban driving challenges. It's the most efficient tool to move a person from point A to point B. We're not looking to carry the 3 to 4 empty seats. We're not looking to carry, all of the extra luggage. This is all around. How do you move a person 100 miles of range, 80 miles per hour top speed? And it's meant for, of course, retail consumers that want it for all of the tasks that they do when they drive solo. But it's also meant for a lot of the different kinds of applications that you could picture for fleet and commercial and utility applications, which we'll talk about in a minute. And then we also envision a shared model too, Jack. We picture that to just round off our ecosystem, at some point we'll be able to make these vehicles available off of sharing pods where you would be able to walk up to the vehicle and unlock the vehicle via an app on your iPhone or on your Android device and be able to take it, from, let's say, downtown San Francisco, for example, to Palo Alto, or in any major city from one point of location to another and share them as well. So quite different model than almost any other EV company out there. And that's what makes our value proposition so completely different than any other EV company.
Well, I think the vehicle was envisioned first as a commuter vehicle. Certainly, COVID has maybe changed the commuting dynamic pretty significantly. But tell our listeners about, and I think you've identified some other opportunities for the vehicle that maybe the earlier folks at the company did not envision. But tell our listeners about the vehicle itself, and then we can dive into use cases.
Yeah, so the first thing to say is, it occupies this space beautifully between micromobility and passenger vehicle, right? If you think about the two ends of the bookshelf, micromobility sitting on the one end of the bookshelf, and that's those little electric scooters and the little electric bikes that are out there, minimal technology integration, users exposed to the elements, lack of safety protection features. And then on the other end of the bookshelf, the passenger vehicles, like we said, which is typically oversized powertrain, whether it's an internal combustion engine or an EV, and 3 to 4 empty seats. This vehicle sits right in the middle. It's about all the things you do when you drive solo. So on the consumer side, which originally was the creation, the vehicle was created for all those things you do when you drive solo. Again, it was for going out when you go get, when, first of all, commuting to work, of course, right? And then going to get your cup of coffee, driving to visit friends, going to get your groceries, going to the gym, right? And in all of those things, it's way safer than a motorcycle, right? It does have front and rear crumple zones. It has side impact protection. It has a roll bar inside. It has torque limiting stability control. And yet, when you get inside,
well,
the
then
vehicle,
it's also enclosed, right? I mean,
it's
hey, that's
enclosed.
A key. Yeah, I mean, so
it's
you're
enclosed.
Weatherproofed, right?
You're weatherproofed. It's enclosed. It's fully integrated. And when you get inside, Jack, it has all of the same, features, premium features, or many of the same premium features that you would envision when you get into your typical passenger car, right? So it does have air conditioning, heating, a heated seat. It has a backup camera, and it has Bluetooth entertainment system as well. So you do feel a lot of the same premium features, but at an attainable price point.
Well, and talk a bit about that attainable price point, because it too sets you apart.
Yes, the price point of the vehicle on the consumer side is at $18,500, and we're at a direct-to-consumer model. So again, you can, while you can go view the vehicle in different retail locations, you can order the vehicle online, and you can order the vehicle just by going onto our website and placing a pre-order there.
Give us a little bit, our listeners, a little bit more information about the engineering of the vehicle. It's a three-wheeler, number one. Tell us a bit about motors, battery capacity, range, etc.
Yep, so it's a three-wheeled vehicle, so it's shaped like a wedge, configured with the two wheels in the front and a wheel, you know, single wheel in the back. It's a rear-wheel drive vehicle. It has a 144-volt battery pack, and it's a lithium-ion battery pack, 17.5 kilowatt-hours. The battery pack is pretty unique. It's split between the two door sills, right? So there's 72 volts on each side. Very, very different than the conventional packs today. And, you know, this doesn't have a ludicrous mode, so you're not going to get into it and go from 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, but yet it is very, very zippy. It feels very nice when you're accelerating. It has a top speed of 80 miles per hour, a range of 100 miles range, and it charges on a level 2 charger in 4 hours or less.
Right. So a lot of usefulness, and that reasonably quick charging, you know, kind of makes it very useful for a commuter. But I think there's other uses as well, and you and I talked about them a little bit when we got together a couple of weeks ago. Let's, you know, kind of explore that a little bit, because it goes far beyond commuting, doesn't it?
And it does. And, you know, this vehicle, it registers as a motorcycle because of its three wheels, right? And because of that, you know, you have a very, very different kind of a vehicle. And because of its single occupancy and a single seat and its unique shape, it's just and its small footprint, it's perfect and it's ideal for fleet applications and commercial and utility applications, right? And I think that today, when you think about the number of single occupant applications in fleets and commercial applications, right? Whether it's pizza delivery or fast food, or whether it's technicians who are taking toolboxes out to job sites in major cities, or whether it's prescription delivery or small parcel or even post, or even security companies, Jack, that are, you know, monitoring, for example, shopping malls at night or inside communities. You know, like we have a residential community that has a guard service, right? There's so many different applications where this vehicle is perfect because it's electric, and again, you don't need something more than this. Why drive a vehicle that has an internal combustion engine and 3 to 4 empty seats when this vehicle solves a lot of those kinds of applications? And, you know, you brought up COVID. Of course, this vehicle was created long before COVID. But you can picture, especially in the food delivery space, right, where the kitchens today and the restaurants today are going through great lengths to prepare this food in a sanitized environment. Well, this vehicle really lends itself to keeping the vehicle in a sanitary environment, because the only person who's in this vehicle is the driver for the period of 8 hours. It's running the shift and delivering the food, right? You're not putting the food into a shared vehicle, into a family vehicle, or into, you know, giving it to a third party to make the delivery, right? So it's very, very unique. And so there's a cargo version of this vehicle, or a utility version of this vehicle, that has extra cargo capacity for all of those unique cargo fleet utility applications. And it's just a great vehicle for all of that. You could picture that. We think that will be a home run for our company.
Let's talk a bit about cost to own and cost of operation, because I think that's an area where you should have big advantages versus the typical internal combustion engine car, for those, especially for those kind of things that you just identify, for those kind of service things, where it makes all the sense in the world that a vehicle would be parked, easily charged, and then go off to drop off a pizza or, you know, food items or prescription drugs or whatever. Tell us a bit about that.
Yeah, so just let's talk about it compared to other EVs first, right? You know, at an $18,500 price point, and let's just use California for an example. California gives a state rebate on the vehicle of about $750, right? And this vehicle is registered as a motorcycle, but you drive it with your normal driver's license because of the safety features that are in the vehicle, right? The total cost of ownership with the preliminary modeling that we've done is less than $40,000 after a 5-year period of time. And that is just incredible when you think of the fact that over a 5-year period of time compared to the other EVs that are out there, it's really, really appealing to have a vehicle that you could drive. And for fleets, this is something that's really important, right? For any EV owner, for any kind of ownership model, it's important. But for fleets, it's really, really important too, because they're looking at, of course, they're looking at total cost of ownership, right?
Sure.
But the fact remains that even just for people who are buying vehicles today and they're considering an electric vehicle versus a vehicle that's an internal combustion engine, you know, a lot of studies have pointed to the fact that most electric vehicles have maintenance costs that are about half that of an internal combustion engine. And that's just simply because most electric vehicles have very few, you know, parts that need to be looked after, right? And of course, there's no oil changes and things like this on an electric vehicle, right? So it's just, it's win-win for most people, whether it's a consumer or even somebody who's looking at it from a fleet application.
Right. We're speaking with Paul Rivera. He is the CEO of Electromechanica Vehicle Corporation, and they make the Solo. I had the chance to drive it. Describe the driving experience for us, would you? I think you kind of went out of your way to give it a driving experience that is in some ways similar to a regular passenger car. You don't really feel out of place inside. Tell us about
that. Yeah, we wanted to make sure that when somebody gets into the vehicle, they're used to the same creature comforts that they're used to in a passenger vehicle, right? A passenger car. So again, the heated seat, the power steering, power brakes, the air conditioning, the Bluetooth connectivity, a backup camera. So some of those features are the same. A lot of those comfort features are the same, right? But the driving is quite different, right? Because the driving itself, when you're sitting in the vehicle, you're sitting in a vehicle that has no passenger to your right, or if you're in a right-hand market, to your left, right? You are sitting basically, for lack of better words, in what I like to refer to as either a Formula One vehicle, it's almost like the cockpit of a fighter jet, or like a Formula One vehicle, right? You're surrounded by that vehicle, and it's just a very, very unique experience because there's nothing to your right or to your left. So it takes a little bit of getting used to, in the sense that you're encapsulated by the vehicle itself.
Right, and you're on the center line of the vehicle, which actually doesn't take much time to get used to at all. At least I found that. It seemed very intuitive that you're in the middle of the vehicle. You can see both sides probably better than you could see in a conventional car. And you just kind of go on from there. So it's pretty easy to adapt to.
It's fun. It's very fun. It's a unique experience. You're a little bit lower in driving, so you feel like you're in a sports car, right? It accelerates fairly nicely. And yeah, you've got great visibility. So it's just quite different in driving from a standpoint. It's just fun. It's very, very fun. And the vehicle itself is kind of trendy and modern and sleek. So, and you draw a lot of attention, I'll tell you that much. I drive mine quite a bit, and people will roll up next to me all the time and ask about it, and they want to learn more about it. So it's just really cool experience.
Let's talk a little bit about vehicle sharing. I think that's maybe a key opportunity too. Describe that philosophy a little bit.
Well, I think that for me, what I saw when I came in as CEO, and you brought this up earlier in the cast, but the bagel was obviously created with a retail consumer in mind and a commuter in mind, right? Because 76% of the people who travel to and from work, they drive their personal vehicle and they're driving 16 miles and they're leaving those 3 to 5 empty seats every day, right? That was what the vehicle was originally created for. And then I saw the opportunity for the fleet applications. But I also believe that this vehicle really, really lends itself to being shared. If you think about the micro-mobility safe and the scooters and the little electric bikes, they're great for that last mile. They're great from getting from your workspace to the bus station or vice versa. But you are exposed to the elements, and they have very limited range. But this vehicle, when you think about the fact that it's all electric and it has 100-mile range, the idea of putting these on pods and working with an infrastructure partner, and we're in talks with a couple right now, but the idea of being able to put them in pods and being able to walk up to, you know, a pod of 6 of these or 10 of these or 12 of these, you know, solo sharing pods, and be able to unlock them either using your iPhone or your Android, and be able to get into the vehicle in one part of the city and take it from one part of a major city to another part of the city and put it back onto the infrastructure, electrical EV infrastructure, is, in my mind, is just where we should be headed in the future as another alternative to mass transit. Today, people, you know, especially as you come out of the COVID and you emerge from the pandemic, people are looking for alternatives, right? People are afraid to use mass transit and less likely to use the Ubers and the Lyfts. And if we can offer, you know, a unique solution here where people have the freedom and the flexibility to come downstairs from their high-rise apartment complex and walk to a solo sharing pod, unlock the vehicle, and take it from one side of the city to the other side of the city in a subscription service and be able to put it right back onto an EV pod, an EV, you know, infrastructure, I think that would be just a win-win situation. There's just a lot of places where you could see that these vehicles could be used in sharing situations. And I really, really believe that that's a third part of our ecosystem that makes a lot of sense. And so when you think about our company today, what makes us quite different than any other company out there, well, of course, we're not trying to compete with Tesla. We're not trying to compete by putting a premium electric vehicle on the road. But at the same time, we're not just putting this unique single occupant, three-wheeled flagship Solo on the road. That's not what this is about. Yes, we have that cool vehicle, but we're creating an ecosystem here. Consumers can buy it if they're interested because it's at an attainable price point. Fleets should be all over it because of the value proposition that it offers fleets. But then the idea of being able to share it, it just creates that third part of the ecosystem for us. And that's what makes our company just so unique here. It's just a totally, totally different EV company.
Right. Well, Paul, I think a lot of people would like to check out this vehicle. Hopefully we've tantalized them a bit. How do they go about doing that?
Well, of course, they can go to the website, electromechanica.com, or they can, you know, check out our stock ticker at Solo. The stock ticker is SOLO, and they can check out all of the latest news there. So either one of those, either www.electromechanica.com or check out the stock ticker. But if they also want to go and visit the retail stores, we have retail stores now in Los Angeles, in Sherman Oaks, and at Westfield Century City. We also have a retail store in Scottsdale, in Arizona, at Fashion Square, and up in Washington Square Mall in Oregon. And we're about to make an announcement where we're really significantly expanding our retail footprint on the West Coast. So I would just say follow us. The journey's just beginning. Really incomparable vehicle and an exciting time for us.
Well, it sounds very exciting. And I was excited to have the opportunity to drive it and to meet you, Paul. And thanks so much for being with us on the show today. We appreciate it.
I really appreciate it, Jack. Thanks so much for having me.
And that was Paul Rivera. He is CEO of Electromechanica Vehicles Corporation. We appreciate him joining us. And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road. And that was our interview with Paul Rivera. He is the CEO of Electromechanica, talking about their Solo electric vehicle, fascinating vehicle. I had a chance to drive that, as you heard, and thanks to him for speaking to us about it. I also have to thank our inimitable co-host, Chris Teague, for being with us all the way from Maine. He comes through the wires somehow, or wirelessly, or somehow we're able to talk 3,000 miles away each week, and that's much appreciated. Thanks for being with us, Chris.
Thank you for having me. I'm much too large to travel by wire. This is all telepathy on my end. But I will say thank you for having me. Thanks, everyone, for listening. If you like what you heard, you like listening to us with our back and forth, hit the subscribe button wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review. That'll help us continue growing and reaching more and more people that hopefully share the same affinity for us that you do.
Yeah. Very good. I share an affinity for you, and you share an affinity for cars, and it's a wonderful symbiotic relationship. So thanks for that, Chris. And I would love to remind folks that they should look for my book if they'd like. It's called The GR Factor, Unleashing the Undeniable Power of the Golden Rule. It's on Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, where you buy your books. I think if you like the show, you'll probably like my book, so check that out. And we want to thank you so much for being with us. Listening to us is what makes it all worthwhile here at America on the Road. So join us again next time right here for America on the Road.